Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Back across the Atlantic Ocean in New Orleans, Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen, where it's carnival time. That's right. It's the one time of the year when the mayor looks normal because everybody's a clown at carnival time. And, man, the airport was buzzy, like not Ruth, just buzzy like you wouldn't believe because people are coming. A friend of mine who runs a restaurant here in New Orleans says, no, this has been great. So, of course, the explanation is we already had our recession. It happened right after the thing. So, anyway, it's warm, and it's warm, too, you know, and, you know, I care about that a whole lot. But, you know, ladies and gentlemen, it's not just New Orleans, and the awareness is dawning slowly but surely at other places around the country. For example, Dateline, Alamosa, Colorado. The United States Army Corps of Engineers. These are the same people that built the defective levee system here in New Orleans. The United States Army Corps of Engineers constructed a new river levee system through Alamosa, Colorado a decade ago. Now it's telling the city of Alamosa the levee may be flawed and the city should pay for it. That's why we love the Army Corps. Alamosa City Manager Nathan Cherpesky brought the situation to the City Council's attention and commented further about it to the newspaper. He said, although the Corps designed the current levee and it was built according to the Corps' design, yes, sir, the Corps is now telling the city the levee was constructed incorrectly. Join the club, babe. The big problem with the levee is the growth of trees on the land side. He pointed out that the Corps left many large trees in place when it constructed the new levee way back in 1997. But it's now apparently blaming the city for the potential structural problems caused, potentially, by the trees. These are big, big trees, and they're saying they shouldn't have been allowed to grow in the levee, he said. He said the trees that the Corps sees as a potential problem did not grow up in the last 12 years. Some are 100 years old. The trees were there when the Corps built the levee, and the Corps even constructed the levee around them in places, Cherpesky said. The Corps sent the city a new vegetation management standard adopted in 2008, and the city's levee does not meet that standard. A Corps inspector raised the concerns with the city and suggested the city should remove the offending trees. With these new rules, our levee built in 1997 appears not to meet standard, Cherpesky said. He said removal of the trees would not only be costly, perhaps requiring reconstruction of the levee, but would be aesthetically and emotionally painful for those landowners on whose properties the trees reside. It's the city's attorney's initial position that the city's easements with landowners along the river do not give the city authority to cut down people's trees. Tree removal might require court action. Cherpesky guessed that the Katrina catastrophe in the New Orleans area, occurring after Alamosa's levee was reconstructed, might have something to do with the changes in standards and current concerns about Alamosa's levee. Well, it's nice they care. Nice they care to prove they learned something somewhere. You know, it's just never too late to prove you learned. And now, ladies and gentlemen, this just in. President Obama's national security team has given a dire assessment of the war in Afghanistan. Really? With one official calling it a challenge much tougher than Iraq, and others hinting that it could take years to turn around. U.S. officials said more troops were urgently needed, both from America and its NATO allies, to counter the increasing strength of the Taliban and warlords opposed to the central government in Kabul. They also said new approaches. How about that? We're needed to untangle an inefficient and conflicting array of civilian aid programs that have wasted billions of dollars. This is Afghanistan, not Iraq. But, you know, if you're good at wasting money, you can take that skill. That's a skill set you can take anywhere. NATO's future is on the line here, says Richard Holbrooke, the special envoy for Afghanistan and Pakistan. It's going to be a long, difficult struggle. In my view, it's going to be much tougher than Iraq. Okay, good. Because that was, what, a cakewalk? It was more a pie walk. Army General David Petraeus says the war in Afghanistan has deteriorated markedly in the past 2 years. Nice of him to notice. And warned of a downward spiral of security. He called for a surge in civilian capacity. Well, why not have a million surges? Afghanistan, said Petraeus, has been known over the years as the graveyard of empires. Suddenly they noticed that. His comment on that, quote, "We cannot take that history lightly," unquote. Apparently, if we're going to be sending in more troops, we cannot take that history heavily either. Ladies and gentlemen, this week the world lost an artist who had one of my favorite voices, but fortunately, we did not lose the voice. Hello, welcome to the show.
What a day. Fortune smiled and came my way, bringing love I'm so lucky to be me. What a night. Suddenly you came inside, looking just I'm so lucky to be me. I am simply thunderstruck at this change in my luck. New at once chose me from all the crowd. There's no other girl I'd rather be. I could laugh out loud. I'm so lucky. Chose me from all the crowd. There's no other girl I'd rather be. I could laugh out loud. I'm so lucky to.
From the shores of Lake Pontchartrain, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. The music for Tales of Airport Security apparently were lost as we crossed the international line. But we have a tale of airport. Actually, we have two. One from a listener, one from yours truly. Scott writes, "Dear Harry, I was recently amazed at a recent lapse in security while traveling from Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates." Yeah, I got a listener who travels to Abu Dhabi. What about it? Scott continues, "I managed to take on board a half-liter bottle of water, which was well beyond the 100 milliliter of liquid allowed. And how did I accidentally achieve this? I placed my cabin baggage on the conveyor belt, and as there was nowhere nearby to dispose of my water, I figured I'd place it next to my bag where it was clearly visible, and the security staff would just take it. I then walked through the metal detector and picked up my water bottle at the other end and boarded my plane. It's a good thing my water was water," Scott writes. That's the same way I stole Miami. And me, personally now, I write to me, "Dear Harry, I was traveling from London to New Orleans, and I had to travel via Dallas, you know, Dallas, well, all was good. And so now, you know, it's an international flight. I go through security in London, serious security, same place where I, regular listeners will remember, I had that head injury about 2 years ago. They still have it arrayed the same way. You can still get the same injury there by bending over to pick up your stuff off the conveyor belt too quickly and not looking at the sharp edge of the invisible plastic that hits you in the forehead. Anyway, so you go through serious security, shoes and things, and I'm on the plane flying internationally, landing in Dallas, where they built, like they build everything in Dallas, a customs hall that's apparently too big, and an airport terminal is too big. I judge that only by the fact that the number of ticketing counters takes maybe half the space, and the rest is just, ooh, something big will come in here soon, maybe. Anyway, in the customs hall, go through immigration, blah, blah, blah. I'm connecting to a flight to New Orleans. I have to go through security again, even though I haven't been anywhere except in immigration and customs. Somehow, I've gone outside the safe zone without even, or the sterile zone without even knowing it. So the conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, is I could have walked out into Dallas unbothered with this, whatever I had for my flight from London. But to turn around and go to New Orleans, I had to be checked all over again. Tales of Airport Security. Yeah, it's just theater, you know, and the more theater, the better, apparently. Tales of Airport Security, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
And first of all, from London.
We are profoundly, and I think I would say unreservedly, sorry.
In November of last year, I made a full apology, unreserved apology, both personally and on behalf of the board, and I'm very happy to repeat that this morning.
I too would echo Dennis Stevenson's comments and Tom's comments that there's a profound and unqualified apology for all of the distress that has been caused.
I'm very sorry what's happened at HBOS. It has affected shareholders, many of whom are colleagues. It's affected the communities in which we live and serve. It's clearly affected taxpayers. And we are extremely sorry for the turn of events that's brought it about.
I could not be more sorry about what's happened.
I've already apologised several times on behalf of myself and the whole board for what has happened.
It is quite clear, with the wisdom of hindsight, that we were overexposed, that we lent too much at the wrong parts in the cycle.
If we knew then what we know now, we wouldn't have taken the risk of finding out.
It's not your fault then, Andy Hornby.
No, it is. It's very much, just to be quite plain, I'm not saying that at all.
British bankers.
Hi, everybody. This is Tom Jones, Santa Monica, home of the home.
Thank you, Tom. A little sorry, premature. Sorry. Tom is sorry for saying that. Those were British bankers at a session of a parliamentary committee this week. They were, I believe, heads of banks who had been forced out for the obvious reasons, but were called upon the parliamentary carpet to do what you just heard. Alex Rodriguez broke his silence on the steroids question this week, telling ESPN he used performance-enhancing drugs for 3 years when he was with the Texas Rangers, once owned by George W. Bush. In the interview with ESPN, Rodriguez apologized and said he didn't know which substances he used. Quote, I was young, I was stupid, I was naive, and I wanted to prove to everyone that I was worthy of being one of the greatest players of all time. When I arrived in Texas, I felt tremendous pressure to perform, he said when he signed a 10-year, $252 million contract when he joined the Rangers in 2001. It's the biggest regret I have in my life because baseball has given me everything. It feels good coming out. Excuse me? And being completely honest, the more honest we can all be, the quicker we can get baseball back to where it needs to be. He described the culture of baseball in the early 2000s as being different and loose. Yeah, much like the culture at the White House. Miley Cyrus has taken to her official fan site to issue a heartfelt apology for the racially offensive photograph she took with her friends. In the picture, Miley is seen using her fingers to make her eyes slant, which is considered degrading to Asian people. It is the 16-year-old's second apology following the advocate group OCA, Group for Asian Pacific Americans, releasing a statement saying the teen set a terrible example for her many young friends. Miley says, I really wanted to stress how sorry I am if the photo of me with my friends offended anyone. I have learned a valuable lesson from this and know that sometimes my actions can be unintentionally hurtful. I know everything is a part of God's ultimate plan, and mistakes happen, so eventually I will become the woman he aspires me to be. That's right. The good Lord has aspirations, just like you and me. Peace and love, Miley. Daylight Tampa, an associate dean at the University of South Florida, has admitted to taking a student's bicycle this week in an act that was captured on a surveillance tape and later posted on YouTube. Abdul Rao, who oversees research grants for the College of Medicine, was suspended while campus officials investigate. In a statement, Rao apologized and said he was trying to help a day laborer who needed transportation. I gave a man who does odd jobs for me permission to use a bicycle that was parked at the center. I acted out of compassion for this nearly homeless man. Boy, if you count those, Santa Monica is the home of the... I acted out of compassion for this nearly homeless man, but I failed to consider that the bicycle belonged to someone on our Alzheimer's team. It gets better. It was a terrible lapse in judgment on my part. I have no excuse. I can only say that my intention was never to bring harm, alarm, or disruption to anyone. No comment from the nearly homeless man. He was back at his near home. Dateline London, the head of Britain's Narcotics Advisory Board, has apologized after saying the drug ecstasy was less dangerous than horse riding. Home Secretary Jackie Smith said David Nutt. The remarks of David Nutt in a scientific journal sent the wrong message to young people about the dangers of drugs. We're back to sending messages to young people. Last heard during the Clinton impeachment foo-foo. What message are we sending to the young people? A message that grown-ups are silly. I've told him, said the Home Secretary, that I was surprised and, in fact, profoundly disappointed by the article, she told legislators in the House of Commons. Professor Nutt apologized to me for his comments, and I've asked him to as well apologize to the families of the victims of ecstasy. Nutt is just a professor of neuropsychopharmacology at Imperial College London and the chair of the government's advisory committee on the misuse of drugs. That's all. What does he know? If you think he's got a funny name, another member of the British cabinet is Ed Balls. Thank you. The folks at TMZ, the gossip website, officially apologized for poking fun at Sam, the koala rescued from the fires in the Australian wilderness. Sam was photographed drinking bottled water, and TMZ.com made a joke, and it was out of line, since Sam suffered burned paws and had been taken to a wildlife shelter. Thursday of this week, swimmer Michael Phelps apologized to all of China. Talk about an apology tour. Talk about a PR guy who's concerned for his bucks. That's right, Michael Phelps apologized to the nation of China. We know why, do we not? It's the thing. The bong. This is an attempt at saving his $1 million advertising deal with car manufacturer Mazda. In a video distributed by Mazda to Chinese media, the Olympian begs for forgiveness from fans who cheered him on during his 8 gold medal wins last summer in Beijing. That seems a long time ago now, doesn't it? And of course, you know, the bong makes it seem like a longer time. To my Chinese friends, you know, because it affects your time sense. To my Chinese, that's what I've heard is, many of you know I recently engaged in behavior which was regrettable and not what people have come to expect from me. Really? I will learn from these mistakes, train hard, and make you proud again, said Phelps in the video apology. He's already lost a deal with Kellogg. Mazda has stuck with him so far, but of course, the apology tour continues. Dateline Monrovia, Liberia. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf apologized to her nation this week for the role she once played in supporting the man who launched the country's 14-year civil war. Speaking under oath before the country's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, hey, there's a good idea. She said she was fooled by Charles Taylor and sent him money in the early years of Liberia's civil war, begun when Taylor's army invaded in 1989. He's currently on trial at The Hague for crimes against humanity. Hey, there's a good idea. I guess you have to be a Liberian to be taken to The Hague. Sirleaf is a Harvard-trained economist. She became Africa's first democratically elected female head of state in 2005. She's been credited with luring foreign investors to Liberia and partly erasing the country's debt. Well, let's get her here. We need that. A Missouri state representative in the heat of House floor debate used a controversial term and has later apologized. The remark by Representative Brian Stevenson came during debate on a resolution opposing the Freedom of Choice Act in Congress. What we are dealing with today, he said, is the greatest power grab by the federal government since the War of Northern Aggression. That's how some Southern sympathizers refer to the Civil War, don't you know? The people who fly the Confederate battle flag. You know that song. It caused the comment caused a small stir in the House chamber. It led Don Calloway, an African-American representative from St. Louis, to request a retraction. Stevenson complied, apologizing for any offense that was caused by his use of the term. If you want to fly your flag, let's fight the war again. And also down south, Orangeburg, South Carolina, more than four decades after the events that have come to be known as the Orangeburg Massacre, Mayor Paul Miller has apologized for his city's role. Those who were there February 8, 1968, said the mayor's apology is a welcome step in the journey toward reconciliation. But for some, the events that took the lives of three students will remain an unsolved chapter in civil rights history until a formal investigation is conducted. Miller's statement was one of the most significant parts of the event and took a tremendous amount of courage, said Dr. Cleveland Sellers, who was wounded that day in 1968, the only person ever convicted in connection with the events was Dr. Sellers, even though he was later pardoned. He continued to call for an official federal report on the incident. How about one of those on the levee failure in New Orleans? Oh, sorry. Oklahoma State coach Travis Ford apologized this week for uttering a profanity in last Saturday's loss at Kansas that was heard on ABC's telecast. Ford called Cowboys guard Obi Muonelo a expletive idiot, a comment that was picked up by a midcourt microphone with under a minute remaining in the game. A source told the Oklahoman that Ford, Coach Ford, in his first season at Oak State, was telling Muonelo to expletive get into it, referring to the Cowboys' full-court press. Speaking on a local radio station, Ford said Monday it was an unfortunate incident, something I regret, no question, and something you can guarantee won't happen again. He said, the emotions of the moment got the best of him. I feel very badly. That's not me. In a previous loss to Texas A&M January 31st, Ford was assessed a technical foul for cursing. Last week, he said he has tried to improve his language in the last 2 months. His boss, athletic director Mike Holder, said he does not want Ford to swear during games. Well, when should he swear? Can't swear during a basketball game. Dateline Hartford, Connecticut, a judge charged with drunken driving and videotaped during using racial slurs while arguing with police officers was suspended without pay for 8 months by a judicial review panel. Superior Court Judge E. Curtissa Cofield, Connecticut's first black female judge, apologized to the State Judicial Review Council. I regret that my actions may have tarnished the institution that I love, she said. I've embarrassed and humiliated my family and loved ones and disappointed my friends. She was arrested in October after her car hit a parked state police cruiser. Always a good idea. Police told them she hadn't had any alcohol, but she failed a sobriety test. She also argued with state police officers A surveillance camera captured the exchanges on video, which shows her using the N-word, calling a black state trooper Negro, threatening that trooper's job, referring to a female officer as Little Girl and Barbie, and using other offensive language. When I watched the video, I did not recognize myself, Cofield told the council. The woman I observed that night is not the woman I am. I wear my hair down. No, she didn't say that. Cofield acknowledged that her conduct was reprehensible, but she said she did not willfully violate the judicial conduct code because her judgment was impaired by her intoxication. The alcohol made me do it. Judge Susan Reynolds appeared to stump Cofield when she asked why Cofield's comments were not racist. Why is it not racism? I think for crimes like these you have to have intent, Cofield said. All I can say was, I was really intoxicated. I can't explain it. Why it is not racism, I don't know. But if it is, or if someone perceives that it is, I apologize for that. And 50 years ago, at the height of the Cold War, the folk musician Pete Seeger was given an ultimatum by the San Diego School Board. Sign an oath condemning communism or cancel a concert at a local high school. The leftist singer, famous for such protest songs as Turn, 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 and Where Have All the Flowers Gone, refused to sign. Soon, the future of his small gig had become an international cause celeb. Eventually, a judge allowed it to proceed anyway. This week, with the controversy a distant memory, the school board has decided finally to forgive and forget. This week, its members voted to issue a public apology to 89-year-old Seeger, which he has happily accepted. In the resolution, its members said they deeply regret their predecessor's action and would like to formally extend the hand of forgiveness to a man now firmly established as one of our dearest national treasures. And yet, there's this. A year after his emotion-charged apology to the stolen generations in Australia, the Aboriginal children who were taken from their homes to be raised by white folks, Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd is accused of doing nothing practical to address the gap between Aboriginal welfare and that of non-Aboriginals. Some Indigenous leaders say Aboriginal people have never been worse off and claim the government has used the apology as a shield against criticism of its failures in Aboriginal affairs. This was the first anniversary of Prime Minister Rudd's apology, but it passed Friday with little notice because of the attention being paid to the wildfires. And somebody who probably should apologize? Stuart Parnell, president of Peanut Corporation of America. That's the company he's the owner of the peanut plant that was causing the salmonella outbreak. He railed, as salmonella illness began spreading across the country last fall, he railed against the costs and delays that the contamination was causing his business, according to internal company documents obtained by Congress. Stuart Parnell also pressed federal regulators to allow him to continue using peanuts from the tainted plant and ship contaminated products to customers with a homemade certificate that falsely attested to their purity. According to the emails and records, he repeatedly tried to get around internal laboratory tests that showed salmonella contamination by sending the samples out to a different laboratory for new tests. When confronted with a positive reading for salmonella in October, instead of destroying the tainted product, Parnell sent it to a different lab and then complained about the delay. Federal regulators called Parnell's actions unconscionable. No, he has not apologized. We'll have further details about that story or a similar one moments from now on Le Show, The Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Why am I feeling so good? Why am I feeling so strong? Why am I feeling when things could look black, that nothing could possibly go wrong? This has been a most unusual day. Love has made me see things in a different way. Can it be? I like myself. Me, so I like. as he is can think I'm wonderful, then quite a gal am I, feeling so unlike.
Direct from the virtual trading floor of Corium Slocum Oliver, this is Mind Your Own Business. I'm Mike Cuccinello at the virtual trading floor. Once again, this week's economic news was grim enough to make TV pitchman Billy Mays lose his enthusiasm. Jobs continued to be shed like so many excess python skins. Profits tumbled like Olympic gymnasts. Bankers were called on the congressional carpet, and Wall Street greeted the latest bank rescue plan with a yawn, cleverly disguised as a 300-point drop. Congress finally disgorged a stimulus bill, with Republicans strategically poised to say, "I told you so," if it fails. The economy is sputtering like a sentence running out of figures of speech, and the airwaves are full of arguments about whether FDR cured or caused the Great Depression. We've had almost three-quarters of a century to settle that question. You have to wonder why it's coming up now. In such a climate, the savvy investor has to wonder whether, in fact, there is such a thing as a savvy investor. Right now, fear has banished greed to the sidelines, maybe even to the locker room. Anything printed on paper, whether stocks or bonds or currencies, looks like a foolish gamble, and even gold may seem risky. The savvy investor might be well advised to put half his money under the mattress, and the other half in mattress stocks. This week brought news of a controversial bankruptcy by a controversial company. And over at the Money Honey Desk, Sylvia Meal Argent has the exclusive interview with the man who's turned it up to Chapter 11.
Thanks, Mike. Until this week, Continental Peanut was the nation's largest supplier of dried peanut solids. Now, after a health scare in which several people died after having the health scared completely out of them, those solids have run out of liquidity. CP has gone into receivership, and its controversial founder, L.J. Pete Tanfran, is with me today. Pete, what happened? As recently as 2006, Consolidated Peanut was one of the high flyers in the super-hot peanut sector.
Well, it's true, Sylvia. Our stock went up more than 250% in the 2 years since the big peanut merger that brought United Peanut and American Peanut under one corporate roof.
Well, that's the merger that earned you the cover of Business Week as King Nut.
Yes, those were indeed the days. And I'm sure you're going to ask me what happened.
It's going to ask you what changed.
Okay, close enough. Three words, Sylvia. Too much regulation.
Pete, if I'm not mistaken, Continental Peanut was, for a considerable amount of time, selling dried peanut solids contaminated with salmonella. Isn't that a sign of not enough regulation?
It is. if the only place you get your information is from the bug police. You know, contaminated is a pretty strong word. Admittedly, there were traces of salmonella, among other things, in those shipments.
Well, did those other things include listeriosis and Legionnaire's disease?
Look, bottom line, there was a lot more than just peanuts in those solids, okay? But, you know, it's like saying when you put chocolate nibs in coffee ice cream, that's a contaminant.
Pete, there were deaths among people who ate products laced with your solids.
There were, very regrettably, Sylvia, no argument. And do you know why there were some deaths? Because the bug police had prevented people from being able to develop salmonella resistance over the past few decades. What we were doing in our own small way was trying to return some degree of antibodies to the American public. And, you know, we were making a profit while doing that, and that's what the bug police just couldn't stand.
Pete, you're saying that salmonella in the peanuts was supposed to be good for people?
I'm saying you can't live in a microbe-free world, Sylvia. Folks enjoyed our product, and their immune systems got stronger. That was win-win, except for those few who were victims of the bug police. They're the ones who, by the way, should be in Chapter 11.
The victims?
The regulators, after all. These bacteria don't hurt the salmon.
They were named after a Dr. Salmon.
Did it kill him?
Apparently not.
And that drives the bug police crazy.
Pete, that would seem to take care of the past. Where does the company go looking forward?
Well, Sylvia, our business plan was sound, providing a delicious product to the food industry while shaving unnecessary so-called sanitation costs. Now, clearly the bug cops have crippled our ability to carry forward that business model in the peanut space. So we're reorganizing, locating new funding, and we plan to emerge from bankruptcy later this year as Consolidated Pecan.
So you can keep the same logo.
That's right. You know, cost saving starts at home, especially in these times.
Pete Tanfran, thanks for stopping by the virtual trading floor today. Mike?
And for today, that's Mind Your Own Business for this week. Tomorrow, why the bad bank could be a good neighbor. Till then, from the virtual trading floor of Corium Salcom Oliver, I'm Mike Cuccinello saying, this week, mind the business of someone you love. So long.
And now, news from outside the bubble. From the British newspaper The Guardian. "We need your help," begins the plaintive ad on the front of the Whitehaven News. Did you work at the Sellafield nuclear plant in the 1960s, 70s, or 80s? Were you by chance in the job of disposing of radioactive material? If so, the owners of Britain's nuclear waste dump would very much like to hear from you. They want you to tell them what you dumped and where you put it. The reason for the ad is simple. The facility's new operator, LLW Repository Limited, has discovered that the historic records of disposal supposedly kept by the British state are far from complete. LLWR are looking for nuclear industry employees who have worked at Sellafield and have been involved in the consignment of waste to the low-level waste repository near Drigg, the ad says. Drigg, we must. We are very keen to speak to people who were directly involved in consigning nuclear waste during the 1960s to the mid-1980s in order to build up a comprehensive picture of the waste inventory in the trenches. According to Dick Raz, yeah, I have to love Britain, the managing director, the ad is an act of thoroughness, not desperation. We think it's important to gain as much information as possible to enable us better to analyze what we have here. We also need to combat some of the mythology and folklore that surrounds us here. By folklore, he means claims by local environmentalists that the site near the giant Sellafield atomic complex is awash with highly radioactive materials, even including some taken from the Chernobyl reactor in the Ukraine. But the newspaper ad and Raz's remarks cut little ice with local Greens. They say the need for such appeals does not bode well for any high-level waste dump being considered by the government in its drive to build a new generation of nuclear power plants. They also warn Drigg contains all sorts of waste, not only from Chernobyl, but from another site in the U.S. If they can't even account for the lower category of radioactive waste, what hope is there for the volumes of significantly more dangerous intermediate and high-level waste they now so desperately want to dump deep underground, said a environmental activist. A Drigg. It's the Driggs. And there's more. from the British newspaper The Telegraph. Main Street retailers plan to draw up new sizes in response to the growing number of overweight and obese children. That'll do it. Shops are measuring 6,000 boys and girls amid an obesity epidemic, which means one in three British children is now classed as overweight. Manufacturers will use the results of the survey using high-tech scanners. Well, why don't you use high-tech slimmers while you're at it? Use the tech to decide how far to increase waist sizes and other measurements to allow for the expanding bulk of the average child. Most companies currently rely on statistics on children's sizes that were published way back in 1990 as the obesity epidemic was just beginning. Asda sells the most children's clothing in Britain, said it wanted to respond to the demands of consumers. A spokesman said, "The size of children is changing. And like many retailers, we're relying on old measurements. We've done a lot to respond to consumer demand, but children are getting bigger, and we need to respond to that." The number of obese children in Britain has risen by one-third in the past decade. More than 30% of British children are now classed as overweight, including 17%, 900,000, whose health is at significant risk. Parents of overweight children usually buy clothes intended for older and taller children. A study last week found that Irish 14-year-olds are 3.5 stone. Ooh, stone is 14 pounds. You do the math. Heavier than children their age 50 years ago. Boys were 9 inches taller, girls 6 inches. But while the height grew steadily over the five decades, most of the weight gain occurred from the 1970s onwards, when high fructose corn. Oh, no, really? No? The new national survey into children's clothes sizes will measure at least 6,000 boys and girls. All right. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This week, Captain Chesley Sullenberger went public to discuss his and his crew's response when that plane plunged into the Hudson River and landed safely with all aboard safe and sound. So the only part of the story that remains to be told is how one national news medium covered the story of the plane crash into the Hudson. And the Found Objects Department is ready to do the job. Katie Couric of CBS News, the anchor of the CBS Evening News, was sent, about a dozen blocks from her warm and comfortable office in Manhattan, from which she could have telephoned, interviewed anybody in the Riverside area. She was sent to a spot right beside the Hudson River to report on the disaster. You're going to hear her preparing to report on the disaster. And by the way, this was such a good decision because what you see behind Katie when she reports on the disaster is no sign of the disaster, but merely New York street traffic, buses, taxis, and cars going past her fast. Here's Katie reporting on the disaster.
Isn't it a flock of geese? Didn't it hit geese?
I had only heard birds. What did they say?
Birds. Okay, I need you to really start writing some more scripts for me, or I'm going to be totally screwed here.
I promise.
Nothing's more important than that.
I got it.
Hey, someone needs to talk to me. I have nothing.
I know. I'm getting up on chair. He's going to talk me through it.
You dictate it to me, okay?
Okay. You don't want to moderate it?
No, because I can read my writing better. You guys are telling they're, you know, it's like 6:20.
What are the words that, just read it slowly, we're writing it out. We can only imagine the fear among the passengers. Say again, fear among the passengers. During the few minutes.
Yeah.
The plane was in the air and then landed in the water.
Okay.
Okay. Then it's joining me now for some survivor, hopefully.
Have Christine do it.
What's Christine Ligorio's number?
No, just have her get on the phone.
Well, he can't because it's his direct line.
Tell him this is more important than him looking at the show. Tell him this is more important.
Jerry.
You're welcome.
I just need my scripts. What?
Jerry. So you're saying get the rest of the cops? Just give us these.
Let me talk to him. Jerry, I need the copy. Figure out the rest of the show later. Just read it to me now.
Yeah, because I got the other one.
Hello? He's not even there.
Jerry. Hello?
I just need someone to read me these scripts.
Yes, bird strikes. More common than you might think.
Go ahead. Hi, 1, 2, 3. I don't hear anything.
I don't either.
Is there? Is it loud enough? Is it up? Do I have control?
I'm going to find out.
What?
You mean as your guest?
I don't hear anything. I don't hear anything. Can you push up the volume? Can you help me? I don't hear anything.
You hear me, Tracy, to talk?
Talk to me. No, I hear nothing. Count. Make it go up. Hello. Count to 10, you guys.
Somebody talk to us.
I don't hear anything.
Can't help, Mike.
Do you want to get on the phone so they can cue me at least?
I'm on the phone. Rick.
1, 2, 3.
Rick, I'm sorry.
Tracy.
David Sanderson was the last man off the
plane. Tracy.
Okay.
Somebody. New York. This is New York.
I don't hear anything.
Okay.
I hear like static.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I hear you. I hear the cameraman when he's talking to me.
You hear me?
She doesn't hear you, Rick.
Talk
to me.
Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Okay. All right. So we have
now I can hear someone. Who's talking to me?
Rick.
Hello? Who's saying hello? Someone saying hello? No, I don't hear Rick.
No, she doesn't hear you, but she does hear somebody because somebody's saying
hello.
I heard someone say hello, too.
No, I didn't.
No, he didn't say hello. Someone else did. Hello?
It just sounded in.
Okay.
She does not hear you.
I hear someone from the truck. Who's talking to me?
The truck is talking to her, Rick, but she doesn't hear the truck.
What's his guy's name?
I will. Okay, your first guest is David Sanderson.
Are they hearing her?
Okay.
Who's the second guest, Rick? Okay.
Just one?
Bill White is the second guest. He'll be here with you. David Sanderson is on the phone.
Is Randall going to be next to me?
Yes.
Okay, I think I should get off this because it's going to look really weird with Randall next to me. Don't you agree? Sorry about that. Pat, come here, please. Come on, mate. You need to help out here. I don't know anything about Bill White's story. Bill is with the Intrepid.
Bill is president of the Intrepid.
It doesn't matter. What was the role of the Intrepid? Did some survivors come on the Intrepid?
No, he witnessed the rescue effort from the stern. It was right off of the Intrepid ship that the plane went down.
Okay, so that's his role. He's an eyewitness.
Right.
Okay. And wait, Pat, the Intrepid is permanently housed, is permanently stationed here in the Hudson.
I hear you, audio. It's Mike. I hear you. This is the fact.
Okay.
Rick?
Okay, what do you want me to do? Hello? Hello? Somebody keeps calling this phone and it keeps call waiting, but I'm just ignoring it.
Do you hear anything?
No, I hear nothing.
Yeah.
Hello? Hello?
Okay,
yeah, I just want to make sure.
She hears something in the phone, Rick.
Yeah, I hear the audio guy from the control room.
She hears the audio guy.
Minute 30 out.
Tell whoever's phone this is. Someone keeps calling it. No, seriously, whose is it? Somebody at NBC, CBS keeps calling this phone. Why are they doing
that?
Hear Rick? No. Hello, audio guy? Hello? 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 I don't hear anything on here now. Hello?
Talk to her again.
Hello?
Why is it taking them so long?
Well, because they were trying to call on this number.
Hello? Hello? Yes.
We're 45 seconds out.
I don't know how I'm going to hear him. Hold it. If you have to, hold it up to the monitor or to whatever. Can you hold this for a second? I got to go, right? Oh, wait. Don't hang up.
Let me have that phone.
And good evening, everyone. As you can imagine, it was an incredible, almost surreal scene here in New York City, just behind me in the Hudson River. Does anybody have anything warm I can put on my feet?
Does anybody have a heavy set of gloves?
No.
I'll put my hands on the market. Not for me, for Katie.
Oh. We'll have more news right after this. Do I look really bad?
Katie, they say you look good. They say it looks good.
That I saw my career flash before my eyes.
Standing on a stool.
I wish I had some Uggs, you know? I should have had Larry go back and get them, you know? Go back and get Lauren. Is it crazy? Crazy? It's crazy. I'm so cold, Rick. Oh, my feet are about to fall off. 51? Is it 151?
Yeah, you can read. Maybe you can read from there. U.S. Airways flight.
Yeah.
An update, U.S. Airways flight.
Yeah.
I would just take a couple graphs from it.
Okay.
Oh, you know that's for the... That's just to get us off the air.
How many 151 passengers?
151 passengers. 151
passengers. 151
passengers,
right?
151 passengers.
Oh, it's 151.
55 people and 51 passengers, and I guess is it four crew or just coming?
No, it's a...
Should say 55 people or passengers? 155 people.
30.
It was 6 minutes after taking off, right?
Six minutes after taking off?
20. That's what you said earlier. 15. 155
people in 6 minutes.
Back in. 3, 2...
And now a quick recap of the plane crash that happened here in the Hudson River here in New York City earlier today. All 155 passengers on board were rescued. I'm Katie Couric in New York. I'll see you later. No, no, you didn't. You said get your goodbye page ready, and then I never heard from you.
Do we need to clean that up at all?
Nobody said no more questions. I would have just said... I just hate when I screw up, but no one said whether to ask. I know, but it's me on the air screwing up. You just have to tell me. Yeah, but you just have to tell me. Why? Where were you? Where were you? Just cue me. I really have to get going, okay?
Katie Couric reporting on the big disaster in New York City. 155 passengers, right? Because she just didn't go over that number enough. To be sure. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
High def, low def, no def, take my hand. It's a digital wonderland.
Federal regulators shepherding the U.S. digital television transition visited Los Angeles this week and asked for divine assistance.
Where you stand in the digital wonderland.
We need people to take up leadership in their community and make sure nobody gets left out on the switch, FCC Commissioner Jonathan Edelstein said during a public forum at the Mount Moriah Baptist Church in South Los Angeles. Churches already have the infrastructure in place to do that. That's right. God help us with the digital switchover. And thousands of Americans, most living in the rural West, will lose television reception when broadcasters go digital because the aging signal relays they count on for programming won't work or will be turned off. Almost as many as 2 out of every 5 of the translators, that's what they're called, that relay free TV signals to areas that can't get them any other way will be affected, according to one expert, leaving screens dark no matter how well residents prepare their own sets for the upcoming digital transition. Some parts of eastern Colorado, such as the Kit Carson County towns of Burlington, Stratton, and Flagler, are already planning for their transmitters to go dark, and communities in Nevada and Wyoming are expected to do the same. It's unclear exactly how many people will be impacted. I don't think people really fully appreciate how big a problem this is going to be, says Kent Parsons, vice president of the National Translator Association, regarded by the government and private sector as the leading expert in the field. That's good planning, boys. The digital wonderland awaits.
I got myself a hat with cherries and a brand new yellow dress. It isn't very hard to guess that the answer will be yes. I'm riding high, and I approve of the trend. Look what I've found me. I got myself a gentleman friend, the sunny sky. Seems like it never will end when he's around me. I'm referring to my gentleman friend. His kind of kissing suits me to a T. What I was missing in the used to be, I'm getting frequently, and so goodbye to cares that hound me. Is it any wonder I wanna laugh and sing and cry? Gonna love him till I die, my gentleman friend.
And the show says a sad but an affectionate and grateful goodbye to Blossom Dearie. Yeah, pick any rhythm track you like. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at this same time on these same stations on the NPR worldwide throughout Europe and the USN 440 cable system around in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on neither XM or Sirius Radio, but they're, now that they're merged, they're going into bankruptcy anyway as the Karma train pulls into the station. On two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, on the internet, at your computer, around the world, at harryshearer.com or kcrw.com. Available as a free download to members at www.audible.com/theshow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like me thinking of something to say at this point, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much, uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist for music played here on, just some of the magical things at your fingertips at harryshearer.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, and thanks always, also, to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO in New Orleans for helping to make today's show so audible. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home not only of the near homeless, but of the homeless themselves. So long from New Orleans. I'm going to go Barkus.